नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
उग्रोप्यनुग्रहे वायम स्वभक्तानां नृकेश्री केश्री वसुपोतानां अन्येषां उग्र विक्रमः। हरे कृष्ण। सो टुडे इज डे ऑस्पिशियस अपीयरेंस डे ऑफ श्री श्री नरसिंहदेव भगवान एंड एट डस्क ही विल मेक हिज ऑफिशियल अपीयरेंस। But since Krishna is all-pervading, all-powerful, so he's also given us his beautiful darshan in the form of Jwala Narasimha. So today morning, this morning we were hearing wonderfully from Gauranga Prabhu about the certain principles that run through the entire pastime of Lord Narasimha Dev. And in brief, we also heard about the background of Hiranyakashipu and his son Prahlad. So in short, Hiranyakashipu is the father, Prahlad is his son. And I guess we could call it the first generation gap between father and son. That was quite wide. The rift was big. The father could not understand what the son was doing. And the son tried to explain to the father what he was doing, but somehow couldn't get through. So this rift or very gross misunderstanding, it led to the fact that Hiranyakashipu ultimately wanted to kill his son, which in Kali Yuga may be not so something which is very unique, because there is always in one house there is a father-son feud, and 10 houses down there is a murder. So, but in the age that we are speaking of, this is a very, very, very unique event. Culture, tradition, values are very strong in this age, as are the physical and mental strength of the residents of this age. So long, long ago, very long ago, a very powerful man by the name of Hiranyakashipu, he qualified himself so much by making use of all the facilities available then to the field of education, science, technology, and even the metaphysical. He became so qualified that he was a perfect example of a first-class demon. Bona fide. And it was his very great desire that his son should also be just like him. Maybe he was also aspiring that his son should be better than him. But the Srimad Bhagavatam explains, and so do so many other histories and Puranas, that son and father, totally on the part of the father, there was no mistake on the part of the son. But son and father could not go hand in hand together. So Hiranyakashipu, ultimately finding his son, he felt that his son is not obeying his instructions, which is not true at all. Prahlad didn't even once say no to whatever his father was telling him to do. Never once in his life. It was by the mistake of his father that this rift grew. His father just asked him a very innocuous question. My dear son, what is the best thing that you know, you have learned? So although it was a very simple question, Hiranyakashipu did not know that it was a guided missile towards him. That would destroy his aspirations totally. And he came to know his son had become a very, very devout follower of Lord Vishnu. And what was surprising was, there was no means by which he could have come in contact with Vishnu as far as Hiranyakashipu was concerned or his entire entourage. Somehow his son had got in touch with Vishnu, and not only just in touch, but he had become a devout follower. That was his inclination. So this was a serious challenge to the authority of Hiranyakashipu. Just imagine, Hiranyakashipu, he had set an entire system wherein Vishnu was completely removed from the pages of history, from all literature, from all media. He had taken systematic efforts and great pains to see that there was no link on his website of Vishnu. Not even by mistake. There was no dead link also there. A link gone dead. It was totally erased from his entire site, from his entire kingdom, the entire universe in fact. And here is his own son, whom he had affectionately named Prahlad, because he felt so much love towards this one son of his. He had many other sons, but this one particular son, he really loved him with his heart, with his life practically, and he had great aspirations for and from this son of his. And this son was like someone rising from the ashes of what he had destroyed. Vishnu, a follower of Vishnu. So it's a long story of how he tried various ways to somehow either convert his son or let us say to get his son back according to what he felt was the best way of living. But things didn't work out. So much so that Hiranyakashipu gave the orders to kill Prahlad. Not once, not twice, n number of times. And surprisingly for Hiranyakashipu, he could not kill his son. This was a big surprise for Hiranyakashipu, because according to his own philosophy in life and his own experience, there was no one who had ever opposed him and succeeded. In fact, it was a long time since even Vishnu had come in contact with him. His only serious challenger, Lord Vishnu. And it was almost as if he was unopposed. And try as he might, Hiranyakashipu, this greatly powerful personality, could not harm even the fragment of the tip of the hair of Prahlad's head. Untouched. This so much frustrated him that a doubt arose in his mind. He said, "This Prahlad, I'm trying so much to kill him and he's unaffected. Is it possible that he will kill me? Is it possible that he'll be the cause of my death?" Now Hiranyakashipu had made all efforts to become immortal. He was convinced that he's an immortal. And a small child raised a doubt within his mind. Could he be the cause of my death? And then, somehow or the other, he comes out of this confused state and says, no, not possible. Maybe I will kill him in the future. But who knows? So he becomes very confused. So seeing his confusion, his associates, the sons of his guru, the guru of the Daityas, Shanda and Amarka by name, they approached him and said, "Don't you worry. Everything will be all right. Right now he's a small child. Just let him grow up. Then he'll face all the billboards and all the magazines and all the internet sites and everything. Just let the hormones rush to his body through at the time of puberty. Everything will be all right." Time and again, material nature has proved that almost every single innocent child has been contaminated by its forces. Every time. And they were so confident. They said, "Don't you worry." And what to speak on top of that, if he hears from a father, he'll be totally convinced that he should become the topmost demon, Asura. So bind him right now with the ropes of Varuna. The ropes of Varuna are the most powerful ropes in the entire universe. Someone bound by the ropes of Varuna cannot be easily freed. Therefore, in Shastra, time and again, if someone has to be really bound, they say, bind that person with the ropes of Varuna. They are the legitimate handcuffs of the lawmen of this universe. The ropes of Varuna. Bind him. Because he may become afraid and he may try to escape. And we'll look after him. And thus saying, they took Prahlad back to their school, to the boarding school. And Srimad Bhagavatam describes that some time passed. And one day, when the teachers had gone off to do some of their household chores during the later part of the afternoon, all the children gathered together and they also invited Prahlad. "Hey Prahlad, come. Free time. For those of you all who have been to school, for those of us who have been to school sometime in our lives, we all remember the free period, don't we? It's mayhem and chaos. That's what makes children so innocent. If they had been intelligent, they would have not made noise, you know. They would have enjoyed the period, but then the supervisor comes in. Because of the noise created. Anyway, so these boys gathered together. They had a free period, free time. And they also invited Prahlad and said, "Come Prahlad, let us enjoy. Free period, leisure time." So Prahlad comes. But now, when Prahlad approaches them, he has this beautiful smile on his face. So wonderful. That everyone is just looking at him. What happened? Who's this personality? And then Prahlad starts telling them about the futility of materialistic life. Immediately. And the whole topic is so interesting that the boys just gather together and say, "Wow, this is it. And this is something so out of the syllabus. We like it." And that is where the chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam class today ended. That the boys, because they had not been polluted, their intelligence had not been polluted by the instructions of their teachers. And the only qualification they had was because they were of tender age. So at this point of time in the lives of these boys, their childlike innocence and their naughty nature allowed them to gain some benefit. They could not retain the instructions of their teacher. And Srimad Bhagavatam says, the teacher who were totally engrossed in condemned duality and bodily comfort. Engrossed and totally convinced by that. These boys were so much attracted to Prahlad that they sat down around him. They gave up their playthings. It's so difficult for children to give up their playthings. It's so difficult for big children to give up their playthings. It's so difficult for adults to give up their playthings. I was traveling recently in a train and I found this nice executive. And he took out his some nice model of his mobile and he was playing video games. A man trying to climb a ladder. And it was so attractive. It was so interesting actually. Not attractive, but interesting. It caught my attention. For 5 whole minutes, I devoted my attention to that game. This man was somehow or the other trying to assist this man trying to climb this ladder, and time and again he would fall down. And this is big, big executive in his game. This is what he, I guess, loved to do, maybe, spare time. And it's so difficult. A person may give up one job to take up another, but give up video games, very difficult. But these boys could give up their playthings just being influenced by Prahlad's smile, his demeanor, his behavior, his appearance. Somehow or the other, the feature of Prahlad, Sri Prahlad, it oozed out so much of compassion towards them. They felt so much at home, so safe, so comforted, so satisfied. That the very things which are the most attractive to them in their lives, their children, they just gave it up. As a man gives up stool after passing that. Just gave it up. And with their eyes, which were like bumblebees, they were just looking at the face of Prahlad. Their hearts totally opened up to him. And Prahlad felt a deep, deep desire that he should do something for their welfare. And thus, he started instructing them in the futility of materialistic life. This is what happens when you have a very receptive audience and a very potent speaker. The topic is of the futility of materialistic life. It's really something to think about before we get into it. Such topics are very, very deep. And for the next chapter, whole chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad is instructing his schoolmates. And basically his instruction falls into 3 categories. First of all, he explains to his classmates the rarity of the human form of life and its very importance. Having done that, he explains how human form of life is wasted by the general populace. And third, he concludes that the goal of human form of life is to serve Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan. So Prahlad, he explains to them what is the importance of human form of life. He says human form of life is so meaningful. Why? Because in human form of life, one can perform devotional service. That is the only meaning that is in the human form of life. The human form of life affords one to take the opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead, which is perfection. There's no other form of life which allows that. So simple, such simple instructions, but so very deep, so very important. Such practical instructions are so difficult to imbibe. Prahlad Maharaj says, this devotional service is such a natural process. Why? Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the most beloved. He is one's real friend, one's maintainer. Every living entity has a natural connection and a relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as it is so natural for iron to be attracted towards a magnet, there's nothing else required for the iron to do. It's its natural inclination, its quality to be attracted by a magnet. Devotional service is natural for a living entity. It is the very nature of a soul to perform devotional service. The unnatural condition is Mr. Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj says that if a living entity is fortunate enough to perform even a slight amount of devotional service, it guarantees perfection. All these advertisements, I was, as a young boy or a growing up boy, as a young adult, I was very attracted by this bank billboards, especially savings advertisements. Invest only 50 rupees now, and by the time your child is 18 years of age, you have 2 lakh to give to your child. 50 and 2 lakh. It's mind-boggling. So attractive. I guess many of us must have been attracted by that. Maybe 80% of us, maybe 90% of the populace, maybe the entire populace at one point of time or the other must have been attracted. Oh, such an attractive offer. Just 50 rupees per month and 2 lakhs after 18 years. That's amazing. But when it is offered the opportunity at a slight amount of devotional service once, it is not a monthly requirement, a monthly investment, even that is not being asked for. That every month let us do slight amount of devotional service. Or every month let us, every day let us do, and it will total up after 18 years of age, you'll have this big total. No. This entire process of devotion is filled with so much magnanimity. As Prahlad Maharaj explains, a slight amount of devotional service can afford one, give one perfection. Who will not be attracted to such an offer? I have no answer at this point of time, but please think about it. But there is illusion there. The illusion is sense enjoyment is so attractive. I mean, yes, wonderful darshan of Jwala Narasimha. Maybe next week there is going to be some other darshan. Maybe next week, maybe every day we have different darshan. But Prabhu ji, what to tell you? This ghar ghar ki kahani is so attractive. Every episode is so interesting. Isn't it? Sense gratification, the object of sense enjoyment, seems so attractive. Right? Just consider, for prasad, we are going to serve you wonderfully cooked karela sabji or sweet ice cream. There's a difference. And obviously we have the philosophy to support the difference, because everything is not one, you know. But the point that I'm trying to put through is this illusion that the sense objects are so attractive is so deep, it's so powerful, that the biggest philosophers have been distracted by it. In North India, this is a typical story that is told by many kathakars, those who are speakers. Bolne ka baigan aur khane ka baigan. You know this? Anyone here has heard this? Brinjal that is eaten and brinjal about which one speaks is different. And the story goes like this. Once a person was trying to explain the qualities of brinjal, which is called begun, which basically means that it has no gun, no qualities. Be means no, guna means qualities. So begun means no qualities. So that vegetable which is called begun has no qualities. So this kathakar, this speaker, gave an entire lecture on begun. Just think, out of 7 days, one lecture was totally on begun. And such kathas attract people, thousands, lakhs. And he said, begun is like this, and begun is like that, and it has no qualities, this, that. And his very own wife was sitting there in the audience. And every time he spoke about the disqualifications of begun, her face started shriveling up, because she remembered today she had made begun bharta. She had prepared some preparation out of brinjal. Now, those who know about begun bharta, they know the best thing that you can make out of begun bagun is bharta. It's very tasty. Anyways, so she remembered that. So as soon as the katha got over, the lecture got over, she ran home, took the entire pot that contained the bharta, the begun, the brinjal preparation, and emptied it into the sewer. The husband comes back. The big kathakar sits down. She serves him. He says, "What is this? I thought today there was going to be begun bharta. Where is the brinjal preparation?" She said, "Just now I heard. In the lecture you said so many things about begun not being good. So I prepared it, but I threw it away." He said, "Oh, you crazy woman. Don't you know? Khane ka begun aur batane ka begun are different. There's a difference between the brinjal that you eat and the brinjal preparation about which you speak." So, although philosophers time and again, and even those who follow the path of spiritual science, they have time and again been convinced by the fact that sense gratification is definitely detrimental to the spiritual life of every living entity, still, ghar ghar ki kahani is so interesting. The cricket score is so interesting. I was driving down Marin Road, Marin Drive 2 days back, and there are these drums with arrangements made around stadium, Wankhede Stadium. And I saw this one stand, Sachin Tendulkar stand. And immediately the discussion started on Sachin Tendulkar. So attractive. Krishna consciousness, discuss about Krishna, what's so big? I mean, how long can you discuss about him? How much can you discuss about Sachin Tendulkar? The paper pulp in the whole world is falling short, I guess. Because there's so much talk about him. What about Krishna? It's so difficult. Why? Sense gratification seems to be very attractive. Seems like that. That is illusion. And Prahlad Maharaj states, Sukham ayendriyakam daitya dehait yogena dehina sarvatra labhyate daivat yatha dukham ayatnataha. He says, pleasures born from the flesh, of the flesh, whatever happiness you get from them, there's no need to make any endeavor from it. It is temporary because distress will soon follow. As distress automatically comes in one's life, so will the required happiness, the allotted quota of happiness that one is to receive. So why unnecessarily make endeavors for the pleasures in life that are anyways going to come? Why make extra endeavor? Now 4 hours running here, there, please, do you have a ticket? Extra ticket? Ready to blind black? 4 hours a person spends, tries to go to every ticket counter to watch this 2020 match or whatever is going on nowadays, the recent fad. And after 4 hours of struggling, straining, sweating, perspiring, no luck. And as he's going back dejected, he finds one ticket lying on the street. Picks it up, it's a valid ticket. Just imagine. And he feels so happy. He goes and watches the match. He goes and watches the show. Anyways, it was going to come. All he had to do was make the endeavor to walk down that road at the appropriate time. But 4 hours has been spent unnecessarily in trying to get something which was not going to come before its allotted time. That's material life. And that is what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. This sukha will come. And at the appropriate time, you will be making the necessary endeavor for it as is required. Just as dukkha comes, just as sorrow comes in one's life. Isn't it? Many times we wish, oh, if I hadn't been there, then I would have been saved the misery. But we were there. Circumstances forced us to be there because we are going to get that allotted misery in our life. Past karma gives us that. So Prahlad Maharaj instructs that if you think that sense gratification is the basis, is the only way of living, then my dear friends, please consider this. Did anyone ever vote for, aspire for distress in his life? No. You don't find people after a new tax bill saying, more taxes, please. No dharnas, no agitation. We want more taxes. We still have 500 rupees from income remaining. Please take it from us, please. Everyone is filing for tax returns. Let us get back something that we have paid in tax. So no one wants distress. But it does come. How? What is the explanation for it? The philosophy of trying to enjoy life based on the sensual attraction does not give us an answer to why distress comes. There's no answer to it. It does come. And therefore Prahlad says, this is the fruit of our past activities. And Srila Prabhupada, he makes a very pertinent comment there. He says, even if we suppose that we do get some benefit from such endeavors, that does not solve the real problems of life, does it? And a very interesting story is there in the Mahabharata, which is a well-known story spoken many times. It is spoken by Vidura to his elder brother Dhritarashtra. Vidura tells him a story to explain to him his situation, everyone's situation in this material world. An allegorical story, an allegory. There was a man, lost his way in the forest, being chased by a lion. This lion is unique, has 6 heads, 12 arms. Man falls into a well, deep dark well, totally dense black. Somehow his hands flailing, he tries to catch onto something to stop his fall. Holds onto a branch, an overhanging branch. Now he's hanging in the well, halfway down. Looks down, there is a big black snake waiting to gobble him up. Looks up, there is this creature with 6 heads, 12 arms, growling at him, very much afraid what to do. Because he's hanging on the branch, how long can one be still? So he starts just shaking that branch. Sorry. At that point of time, he hears some nibbling noise. He looks at one end of the branch. He sees at one end, there is a black rat gnawing at that end of the branch. Looks at the other end of the branch, there is a white rat nibbling at it. Now the conclusion is very clear. Rats don't stop nibbling, gnawing. The only time they stop gnawing is when there is nothing more left to gnaw. So at one point of time, that branch is going to fall down. And what is waiting down is the snake. Can't go up. Six-headed tiger there. With big, big fangs. Becomes a little agitated. starts turning around here and there. He does not know, but on that very branch, a little higher up, there's a beehive. His agitation agitates the hive. The bees starts flying here and there, and they're trying to find out who agitated us. They go and bite him, sting him. Thousands of them. Just imagine his situation. He's being stung by bees. Ever been stung by bees? It's horrible. One cannot stand the pain. It's intense. And nothing he can do. He cannot let go of the branch. However, this very agitation, it makes the honey within the comb form into a small golden drop right at the bottom of the hive on its outside. And then it falls right into his mouth. And he says, "Ah, honey, pleasure." And within the moment, he forgets everything, just waiting for the next drop to fall. Can you imagine the intensity of that situation? He's waiting. Ah. Hanging desperately for his life. Somewhere at the back of his mind, he knows there's a snake there. There is a tiger up there. There are rats gnawing. Bees are stinging him. Ah. My future is bright. And just imagine his form. He's seeing that drop form. Slowly but surely. Tiny, tiny drop. Then it becomes big, big. It's like, you know, everyone's, my pleasure is coming. It's coming right around the corner. I can see it. So typical of everyday life. So Vidura explains this and he says, this is how a living entity spends his human form of life. The tiger represents, six heads represent the six seasons. 12 arms represent the 12 months of the year. That is ready. You go up, it will finish you off. The snake represents the black snake of time, Kal Sarpa. The two rats, black and white, are day and night, gnawing away our life. The life force, which is a branch on which we are hanging tentatively, desperately. The bees are the different other miseries that come sometimes. You know, the tur dal prices go up twice. The Tata company says you can now have car at 1.5 lakhs, but then petrol prices go up 1.5 times. So you have a car, but no petrol. You have mobiles, but no SIM card. Can't afford it. And then that shiny little drop of honey that slowly forms, and God only knows when it is going to fall in our mouth. But material nature is so clever. It will fall in the mouth sometime or the other. Just to make us go on hanging onto that branch, which is someday or the other going to fall. Definitely. So even if there is some benefit, some drop of honey, does it solve the real problem? Does it? That is what Srila Prabhupada is speaking about here. The real problems of life are birth, death, old age and disease. How can any material advancement, even if it is there, there is some benefit, we may acknowledge it, some benefit is there. Can it really solve the real problems of life? It can't. And hence, Prahlad Maharaj concludes this first part by saying, intelligent persons therefore try to achieve the highest goal which is afforded in the human form of life. Tat prayaso na kartavya yat ayurveya param nat tatha vindate chema mukunda charanambujam. Srila Prabhupada, he makes a very interesting comment to this verse, which means that endeavors made for material advancement, what is the use of it? It is so futile. Unnecessary endeavors. It is so futile. Why? Because they do not give you the highest benefit in life. The only activity that can grant one the highest benefit in life is Mukunda Charana Ambuja. somehow or the other taking shelter of the process of devotional service. Keshava Dhrita Narahari Jaya Jagadisha Hare. That process. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Any activities which come to this conclusion, all glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, that can afford the highest benefit, the highest perfection in life. But there is a big challenge. Prahlad Maharaj says, the human form of life affords this benediction. Intelligent persons will try to take full benefit of this opportunity. The challenge is, human form of life is temporary and steadily dwindling. It does not last forever. We cannot say that I'll start tomorrow. Why? Because human form of life can come to an end at any time, any given time. It's adhruvam. Adhruvam. It is not dhruva. It is not something that is fixed. It is temporary. Although it affords a lot of artha, but it is temporary. And not only that, the facilities that are offered in the human form of life steadily go on decreasing. They dwindle. If you think that now let us make the best use of both the worlds and later on we can become a little more serious in practicing Krishna consciousness, the dwindling nature of human form of life takes away the very resources by which we can practice Krishna consciousness. The eyesight, the body, the strength, the memory power slowly dwindles away. And that is a challenge about which one has to be aware. So Prahlad concludes this. And then Prahlad Maharaj explains to us, how does a human being waste one's human form of life? And somehow or the other, Prahlad Maharaj at 5 years of age seems to be a very expert mathematician. He gives some formulae here, some nice mathematical explanation. He says, a human being lives for 100 years. Half of the time he spends in sleeping. 50 years gone. Out of the remaining years, the first 10 years are in total confused state, trying to identify who the relatives are, who the friends are, and who are not. Childhood. Just trying to understand things around 10 years go. Another 10 years go in boyhood, in frivolity. Now you know something and you have some vigor, some energy, youthful energy. So it goes in frivolity. You talk to the youth and they say, tab ka tab dekha jayega. Youthful energy allows us to be callous, isn't it? You talk with adults, they are very serious. No, you have to do this. And youth like, kaiko tension. Why take so much tension? Right, in Bombay this language is used. Why so much tension? Papa, enjoy. Don't worry. Everything in good time. But the father knows time is running. The wheels of time are just going fast. The father says, you don't understand. There's no time. Do. When the youth is saying, after my badminton match, after my swimming this, after my outing there. So this youthful vigor and lack of experience allows one to be a little callous. Or makes one a little callous. Especially towards the meaning of life. So Prahlad Maharaj says another 10 years goes in that. Boyhood. And in one's life, the anxiety of what will happen to all that one has done in life I've accumulated so much. My house, my property, my wife, my husband, my children, my nation, my shares. In total anxiety, what will happen to me and all this property? This is a typical feature of the old age. And in Hindi they say, sanki ho gaya hai. The person has become a little eccentric. And why has it become eccentric? Why a little crazy? Because of all this anxiety. What will happen to all this? It is going to go away. Please, I still want to have it, but I know it is going to go away. Prahlad Maharaj says, it begins, this anxious phase, it takes a total of 20 years of our life. So 50 years gone in sleep, 10 years in childhood, 10 years in boyhood, 20 years in old age anxieties. What is left? Prahlad at 5 years arrived at that conclusion. Just imagine. He must be a genius. IQ 120 or something like that. And he says, those 10 years, the remaining part of her life, one spends in trying to satisfy one's insatiable lusty desires. So even 10 years are gone in trying to satisfy. Because boyhood, childhood, one is hardly aware of them. Old age goes in because one cannot enjoy. So only time that one gets, one wants to take the most out of it. As they say, pura ras juice lena chahte, you know, take out the complete juice out of life by trying to enjoy life through sensual pleasures. So that is the sum total of the 100 years of life. Where is the time to practice Krishna consciousness? Prabhuji, the soul is never dies. There is next life. Right from beginning, Krishna is assured, this lifetime, little endeavor, next lifetime, devotee's family. Since beginning, we'll practice. Don't worry. Philosophy to the rescue of the immature philosophers in Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj says, this is how the human form of life is wasted. And he says that practically the basis of wasting the human form of life is the increased attachment to sensual pleasure, which specifically begins by having something which is known as family life. He says this small term under this board, this hoarding, this board, there is so much going on. Not just attachment, not just family attachment. He says increasing family attachment is the basis of wasting one's human form of life. Shesham griheshu saktasya pramattasya payatihi. Pramatta. Pramattasya. This person who is totally pramatta mad. Prahlad, Srila Prabhupada, in one of his lectures, he explains the definition of pramatta. He said, matta means mad, pramatta means sufficiently mad. Now it took me a long time to understand. I can understand sufficiently satisfied. It makes sense. Right? Sufficient and satisfaction, both positive. How do you explain sufficiently mad? Sri Prabhupada uses words with such appropriateness. Choice words. Sufficiently. There is no doubt that sanity can have any hope there. No possibility. If Mr. Sane, the demigoddess of sane, sanity comes and says, can I have some room here? No vacancy. Pramatta means sufficiently mad. In another lecture, Prabhupada says, PhD in madness. A person who has got PhD in madness. So, pramattasya apayati. A person, somehow or the other, has become so much mad because of this family affection. He wastes the human form of life. And how does he do that? Why does a person do that? Sneha pashair dridam baddham. Because bound by the strong ropes of snehapash, sneha, affection. When I joined the Hare Krishna movement, as any new person who does not have sufficient support of having devotees in the family or friends around, you know, if you are alone and you immediately join the Hare Krishna movement, then one becomes sufficiently crazy. Because first thing one thinks is one can change the whole world. And then basically starts off with the family. So this scene, many of us have experienced. A person becomes newly introduced and convinced to Krishna consciousness, goes home and radically changes everything. No TV, no tea, no coffee. If they're eating meat, no meat eating. Practically no to everything that was happening in the house. What does that leave you to leave the family with? Vacancy. Total vacancy. There's nothing that can be done there. So everyone becomes afraid. So that was a scene. And then I happened to visit my grandparents, especially my grandmother. And she called me close and she asked me this question. Don't you feel any affection for us? This was long back. So this is snehapash. In economics, this principle is very much understood and valued. If you want the economic condition of any state to improve, just allow them to have very strong family relationships. Put a lot of emphasis on strong family relationships. The economy of that particular place will boom. And the philosophy is simple, the understanding is simple. Because of that affection, the person has intense desire to work for economic development, for earth, for money. Naturally, the economy will improve. So this is understood even by the field of economics. It is not just an understanding in spiritual science. This principle is understood even by those who have no understanding of spiritual science. And Prahlad Maharaj explains that. The sneha pash, dridam baddham, because they are so much powerfully bound by the sneha pash. Try as one might to convince either by oneself, matirna krishne parato svatova, by oneself, by others, or by a combination of both, such a person can never, his mati can never go towards Krishna. It's impossible, it's difficult. Impossible in the sense means it's very, very difficult. As long as the sneha pash is there. And Prahlad Maharaj analyzes the situation of a person in such a family atmosphere. He says, within the core of his heart, the person has pictures of his family members installed there. Shri Prabhupada once went to South India and visited the house of a person who was very high in the government, very, very well-established person. And after the initial preliminaries of social talk and everything, they went into his special study room. And there, the walls were all decorated with photographs. And very proudly he said, "This Swamiji is my father, the late so-and-so. And this Swamiji is my grandfather. And this Swamiji is the brother of my grandfather. And this Swamiji is the brother of my father. And this Swamiji is the husband of my sister. This Swamiji is my son. This is my other son. This is my daughter." And with also their qualifications. My son, who's an engineer. My daughter, who's a doctor. Maybe settled in New York or something like that. And after giving a complete explanation of this entire photo gallery, he goes out for some purpose. And as soon as he's out, Prabhupada, he casts one glance at this entire wall with these photos on them, looks at his disciples and says, "This is my sex life." Very, very clear statement. This Swamiji is my material life. This entire photo gallery espouses that. So this is very dear to a materialist. Within the core of his heart, he carries what Prahlad Maharaj says, the pictures of his dear family members. And Prahlad then he starts putting forward rhetorical questions. He says, how can such a person give up a kind and sympathetic wife who pleases him in a solitary place? Radhanath Swami Maharaj, a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, he was once explaining that he was attending a conference on religion or something related to philosophy. And in the West, in the United States of America. And during the refreshment time, a man walked up to him and said, so I see that you're a monk. I can also understand that you have your the tradition that you follow is related to India, right? So Radhana Swami Maharaj explained to him that he was a member of ISKCON, he was a sannyasi. Yeah, I know that. I myself have been in India. I studied there. Actually, I have my PhD in Sanskrit. And do you know which, what was the books that I used, the guidebooks for my thesis? Gita Govinda. And he says, I can never understand how one can worship a person so immoral. Like this person called Krishna is dancing with so many girls, unwed girls, or the wives of others. And how can someone worship such an immoral person? So Radhanath Swami Maharaj said, sir, before you go to higher mathematics, don't we study addition and subtraction tables? Don't we study numbers, odd, even, whole, A, B, C, D? What if somehow or the other someone studies higher maths but has no understanding of the basics of mathematics? He cannot add 2 plus 2. But ask him, what is sine square x? He says 1 plus cos square x. Or maybe I'm wrong, 1 minus cos square x. Something like that. So he said, what you have studied is the PhD of religion, but you have no understanding of the basics of spiritual science. That is Bhagavad Gita. It begins with, Dehi nosmin yatha dehi. I am not this body. And Radhanath Swami Maharaj says, just at that point of time, his wife called him. And he said, Swamiji, wife is calling. I'm sorry. So how can one refuse such a kind and compassionate wife who pleases one in a solitary place? Even if one has done PhD in Sanskrit in Gita Govinda, how can one have an understanding of what is going on? How can one, a person, give up small children who speak in such beautiful, eloquent, broken language? Just a few days back, one person that I know, he comes with his son. Actually, we are driving in a car. I think he must be somewhere around here. I beg his forgiveness. But only he knows that I am speaking about him. We are driving around in his car and he shows me, he's on the steering wheel and takes out his mobile phone and says, fidgets with it and shows me a video of his four-month-old son. And this is in Bombay. Mid-afternoon. You can imagine it. Traffic, South Bombay. But the affection that he feels. And you know, what are the noises that I hear from the... And even he hears, because this is a comment he makes. And he says, my son is making squeaky noises. I said, yes, he is definitely making squeaky noises. But it sounds, and I really wanted, I asked him, do you really understand what he says? And now, but he's so happy just hearing those as it had squeaky noises. So how can a person give up children who speak so eloquently in their broken language? How can one give up elderly parents towards whom one feels so responsible that one has to take care of them? Sons and daughters, especially daughters who have been married off and are staying with their husband in a different place. Father feels so much despondent, not being able to do anything for his daughter anymore because of that sneha pash. And then he says, decorative items like furniture, how can one give up that? There is this nice joke. There was a person, a shopkeeper actually, and because of old age, he was just counting his final moments. And his whole family, some or the other, come there. And suddenly this person, he's in a delirious state for quite some time, just gets up and speaks some nonsense. And people are like, okay, calm down. And just before he's about to pass away, you know, sometimes just before the final moment, a person just gets his final surge of energy. So he just gets up and says, wife, are you there? She says, yes, I'm here, don't worry. Son, are you there? Yes, I'm here, don't worry. Daughter-in-law, are you there? Yes, I'm here. My dear daughter, are you there? Yes, I'm here. Son-in-law, are you here? Yes, I'm here. If all of you are here, who is there at the shop? And then, he dies. So that is what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. How can one give up decorative items like furniture? Like the shop. How can one give up one's pet animals? In Maharashtra, the saint, our saint is very famous, Maharaj Tukaram Maharaj. It is explained that he was so devoted that actually Lord Vishnu sent his own airplane from his own home, from Vaikuntha airplane to take him back home, back to the spiritual world. And he asked his wife, please come along. And she says, who will take care of the buffalo? It's very nice, very, very... in Marathi, it's really humorous. Mais. She says, who will take care of the buffalo at home? So pet animals. Prahlad Maharaj says, sometimes a snehapash, how can one give up even one's servants? And Prahlad Maharaj says, just like a silkworm builds a cocoon around itself and finally gets caught and dies within that, similarly, such a person just builds up a cocoon of family, relatives, furniture, everything around him and wastes his human form of life simply for the satisfaction of sensual pleasure. For such family attachment, Maharaj Prahlad says, money is required, and therefore, for such a person, money is sweeter than honey. Now, for those of us who've tasted honey, it is sweet. Now, for money to be sweeter than honey, one really has to be convinced. But Prahlad Maharaj says, for a person who has, for such sneha pash, maintenance of the family, money is sweeter than honey. So much so, he gives an example. He says, for money, thieves, they're ready to give up their lives. In fact, burglars, they have a policy. When they break into a house, their policy is, don't enter head first. The first thing that they put inside are their arms. Because if someone is waiting there with a weapon, the first thing that will go is arms. If the head goes, no second chance. Did you know this policy? No. I don't know. I won't tell you what is my source. But this is a policy amongst burglars. But thieves, they know what will happen when they get caught. They will be beaten black and blue. If they are lucky, they will be given up to the police. But still they take the risk because money is there. Professional soldiers, mercenaries, they go and fight anyone's battle. They don't care. Why? money. Merchants, they're ready to go to any corner of the world. Like in India, they say, you go to any corner of the world, you definitely find baniyas. Some or the other, money is there, they'll go. And they have to face such risks that they don't know whom they're going to meet, what reception they'll get, whether they'll survive or not, but they go. In fact, money is so important to such people. Prahlad Maharaj says, they are ready to cheat. Although they know by such cheating, they will be either, if caught, they will be punished by the government. Or if they believe in afterlife, they know they will be punished by the laws of Yamaraj. But still, they are ready to cheat. There is this very nice anecdote about this person who was really in a very poverty-stricken state. And therefore, he prayed to one of these demigods. He said, please, I have this one buffalo. Let me somehow either sell it off for a good sum and I'll offer you half the money. Half of the money is mine and half of that I'll give it to you. Somehow or the other, because of this arrangement, the buffalo got sold. He got a customer and the customer asked him, how much? He said, 50,000 rupees. Customer said, all right, I'm ready to take it. And at that moment, the man canceled the deal. He said, no. I'm sorry. The deal is, the rope which is tying this buffalo to this pole here, that rope also must be bought along with the buffalo. The man said, all right, I am ready to buy the rope. What was the rope be worth? Maybe 50 paisa? He said, no, the rope is worth 50,000 rupees along with that buffalo free. Now imagine the customer must definitely be thinking this man is crazy. Before he changes his mind, again, he wanted to finish off the deal. He said, okay, tathastu. He finished off the deal, took the buffalo and he was going home and thinking, what a crazy person. Anyways, the buffalo is worth 50,000 rupees. I got a deal. But let me go back and tell this story. This man is selling a rope for 50,000 rupees, buffalo free. But then he did not know the real story. So the man goes to this demigod and says, buffalo went for free. What can I do? And he pockets the whole 50,000 rupees. He knows he's cheating. But then money is sweeter than honey. That is what Prahlad Maharaj is stating here. They are ready to cheat. Even though they know that they will be punished by the laws of this very state. Still they will cheat. And if they believe in afterlife, they know the laws of Yamaraj are going to punish them. So Prahlad Maharaj concludes this section by saying that such a person cannot understand that wasting the human form of life for family maintenance is not really worth the value of the human form of life. This person never develops even the slightest distaste for material existence, although time and again he has received nothing but suffering from it. Srila Prabhupada gives a nice analogy. He says, I've got used to saying Srila Prabhupada, but I'm not very sure whether Prabhupada said it. But this analogy is there, which explains something very interesting. A person is hitting his head on the wall. Bang, bang, bang. Another person comes and says, hey, what's happening? He says, when I stop, it gives me so much pleasure. I no longer feel the pain of hitting the head against the wall. And then he goes, bang, bang, bang again. This is material life. Time and again, there is this banging going on, suffering going on. The head is aching. But there is no distaste for it. One does not even consider, why am I banging my head against the wall? Just because when I stop, it gives me pleasure. It is just absence of pain. But then one is never convinced. Such a person is very attentive to see that not one farthing, one paisa is lost by mismanagement. However, he wastes his entire human form of life, which is worth more than crores of rupees. He cannot understand the value of the human form of life, but he's so very careful in trying to manage all his small pennies and seeing that not even one is misspent by mismanagement. Careful in his accounts, everything. Anything beyond, he's very angry. Why this? Don't you understand? Pasine se paisa kamaya hai. I've spent so much of my sweat in earning this money. But this person can never understand that the human form of life, which is worth so much more, is simply lost, gone away. So he's so very careful in one instance, but totally at a loss, ignorant, when it really matters. There was a person, once a king visited a village, and the villagers treated him so nicely, the king became so happy, he said, every single one of you, every single family, ask and I will give. Whatever you want. Someone said, my son doesn't have a job, please give him a job. Done. One family said, my wife, daughter needs to be married, we need some money. King said, immediately give him money. Someone says, we don't have a house, please. So everyone asked for whatever they wanted. There was one person, when the king came to him, he said, please become my friend. King said, all right, is that what you want? Okay, I'm your friend. Done. And the whole village was just laughing at him the next time. Mahamurk. The king came and he said, please become my friend. Now what will... The king is there in his capital, you are here. What is the use of such friendship? 1 year passed. One day, suddenly, the village, everyone is surprised. A highway is being built to their village. They are surprised that this particular villager, his house is converted into a palace. A palace is built for him with gardens and lawns and waterfalls, fountains, peacocks, deer, with most luxurious beds inside this. Everything according to what a king would want. They are amazed. And then they find the procession of the king coming after a few days. They asked, what happened? And he said, nothing. I just, you know, the king is my friend. So I just sent him a letter that I have this function at my house. Please come. And because the king considers me his friend, obviously he's coming and he's going to stay here. So everything has to be according to his standard of living. So just by becoming the friend of a king, he got everything, the sum total of everything and much, much more, the association of the king himself as a friend, which the others never thought ever. They thought that this person is goners. He's mad, gone crazy. So, this is what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. They're so careful about maintaining the little, small pennies. They forget the value of the human form of life and simply waste it away. Not understanding that if we can make Krishna the friend, everything is there. And then he says, in this conclusion, a very important point. He says, even educated persons who have such nice education, they consider this is mine, this is theirs. And thus, just because they only want things for their own family, they endeavor for that. In the same way as an uneducated cat or dog would do. Prabhupada, in one of his small books, he says, a dog at night will carefully guard his area and any other dog comes, he goes, wow, wow, wow. This is my area. And his wife, his children, everyone is welcome. In the morning, a man comes in his car and drives the dog away and gone is his territory. His country is gone. So even educated persons who have knowledge, who understand what life is all about, even they, because of this snehapash, this is mine and this is theirs, this differentiation, even Dhritarashtra, mamaka pandavas chaiva, my sons and the sons of Pandu, such a knowledgeable person, the son of Vyasadeva himself, but totally bewildered. Because of snehapash. Prahlad Maharaj says, such personalities, despite their education, simply become krida mriga. They become play animals in the hands of their loved ones. Simply at their beck and call. And thus being victimized, they become surrounded by children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And in this way, they get shackled to material life. Prahlad Maharaj says, people who are addicted to such a life are called demons. My dear friends, although you are born in demoniac families, please do not ever stay in the company of such personalities. Take the shelter of Lord Narayan, without which such knowledge and such shelter, one can never liberate himself from material bondage. No one has ever done something like this in the past or anywhere. Without the shelter of Lord Narayan, one can never be free from this snare pash. So he's giving a very very, very important understanding and also encouraging his friends. You see, Prahlad Maharaj and his friends, they never had any ISKCON temple to go to. Nor did they have an opportunity to cook prasad in their house. In fact, they couldn't even have a satsang program. They had no literature to read. All their channels were showing anti-Krishna conscious. Their mobile ringtones were filled with Hiranyakashipu songs. Prahlad Maharaj had to live his life in a way as if he was enjoying that. He was staying in the palace. He must have had a luxurious bed. He must be eating in golden plates. He's the son of the king. He has to follow it. He must be going in golden Rolls Royces. Soldiers with golden platinum helmets bowing down to him. Hiranyakashipu was the king of the universe. Can you imagine this situation? And so, what must his friends be like? They must be from the upper end of the town, you know. And generally, what happens? Parties, outings, right? And because Hiranyakashipu and the others had no idea, obviously, such things must be going on. And hence, Prahlad Maharaj, just imagine Prahlad telling them, don't take the association of such persons. All these boys are sitting like this and they're wondering, oh, what do we do now? Where do we go? I mean, everywhere surrounding us is just this scenario. So Prahlad says, take shelter of Lord Narayan. And with this, he concludes the second part. And then we come to the third part of his instructions, that the goal of human form of life is to worship Narayan. So in a situation like this, where they have no opportunity to worship Lord Narayan, how do they worship Lord Narayan? How can they establish a relationship with Lord Narayan? Prahlad is telling them, it's good for you, Prabhu, to say, but you come and stay in our life and then you'll find out how difficult it is. You know, I was once in the traveling in the Himalayas, and I went to a village. And these villagers were very nice. They were some of them were nice Brahminical families, and they were cooking nice omelets for us. And then we asked them, and they said, nowhere in the Himalayas are you going. Everyone in the Himalayas eats food that is unimaginable. So I said, but you know what is the philosophy. Why don't you follow? He says, Maharaj, it is easy for you. You are sadhu, you have renounced everything. What? Aapko to kandmul khakar jeena hai, humko to kuch aur. You can survive on roots, fruits, but we have to make some compromises here, there. But don't worry, we Shri Vishnu it. Radhanath Swami Maharaj was saying that once he visited a person who was from a very aristocratic family in India, and he was drinking tea, and he said, Swamiji, this tea is offered. See, there's tulsi in it. Can you imagine that? So how does one do that? Is it a practical proposition? Obviously, the children are going to, they are going to have these big question marks on their faces. And therefore, the third part of his instructions to his playmates is how to achieve this goal. And very simply, he concludes. He says, it is natural to worship Narayan and develop a relationship with him because every living entity already has a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is independent of time, place, and circumstance. And he gives a very wonderful example. He says, father and son, any need to say, no, today time is not good, so no relationship. You're not my father, I'm not son. The relationship is already there. So the relationship with Lord Narayan is already there. And hence, the easiest thing in this world to do is worship Lord Narayan. And then he makes a very, very significant point, which Srila Prabhupada also points. He says, worshipping Lord Narayan is so easy. Even a child can do it, and an old man too. Because Prahlad's friends can say, Prahlad, we are children. How can I chant 16 rounds? Attending Mangal Aarti is so difficult. We see Papa, Mummy, we see even Prabhuji, difficult for them in the ashram. How can we? You know, as children. He says it's the most easy thing to do. And Prabhupada clarifies that Ajamil, somehow or the other in his life, he adopted a way of living which was totally against the principles of Krishna consciousness. And he willingly did it. He had the knowledge. Somehow or the other, he was so much overwhelmed by circumstances that out of a desire to enjoy material creation, he willingly threw away all the principles of Krishna consciousness and adopted a very, very sinful life. But just because he chanted the name Narayan, Lord Vishnu helped him. Lord Narayan helped him out so much so that he was saved from the pasha, from the ropes of Yama, the god of death. Who in this world can do like that? Prabhupada says, politicians and personalities in this world have been seen to make so much efforts to win over the people towards them, to make them love them, and sometimes one amongst them kills them. After so much efforts. And Lord Vishnu, being Lord Narayan, rejected, and this person just says, once Narayan, and he opens the gates of the spiritual world to him. It's so easy to worship Lord Narayan. Therefore, my dear friends, it's very easy. It's natural and it's very easy. Even a child can do it. Time is short. Govind Prabhu also is going to speak. So I'll conclude. So in short, I'm really very sorry. Maybe some other time I'll conclude. If you are interested, please read this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Interestingly, at Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir, we are somehow or the other at this stage in our Srimad Bhagavatam class that this very chapter is going to start from tomorrow. It's only 30 verses. It's so beautiful. So to conclude, Prahlad Maharaj says that those who are intelligent people, he uses the word pragya, which means those who can distinguish between right and wrong, they take up to the process of worshipping Lord Narayan, specifically through following the ninefold process of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembrance, etc. Of which in Kali Yuga, hearing and chanting has been made so very affordable. You can buy it at a very cheap price. Very cheap. All one has to do is just put the endeavor into it. Hear about Krishna and chant about his glories, especially his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And this is Prahlad's instructions, Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his schoolmates, which all began one day, somehow or the other, there was a free period. And everyone came to them and said, Prahlad, let us go for a picnic. And Prahlad said, yes, I'll take you on a spiritual picnic. The understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Narasingadeva. Shri Narasingadeva Bhagavan ki, Prahlad Maharaj ki, Tai Gaur Premanande. And now, we've been waiting for Govind Prabhu to speak. We request him to please come. Hare Krishna.